You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, October 21st, 2012, and it's the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from EvilSpaceCat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello.
From the Animation Aficionados Podcast, Ben Carver.
Hey there.
And I'm Tom Trevor from 910 Comics. That's 910cmx.com. Let's see what's in the news. Our top story today, PayPal changes its user agreement to prevent class action lawsuits. That's right, our beloved PayPal, who is going through and has had quite a bit of problems recently with some of the customer agreements they have revamped it once again, allowing you to take away your part in a class action suit, unless, of course, you opt out of it by December 1st, 2012. Now, buried amongst the legalese is where they have your opt-out selection, specifically Section 14, Subsection 3, Section 3. Wow. But specifically, it's the prohibition of class and representative actions against non-individualized relief. So they are doing something illegal by blocking, making your agreement to not sue them in case they do something that you can sue them. It makes sense to me, folks. You can bet we're going to be talking about this one more in the discussion portion of the period. And this came to us from brightsideofnews.com. Next, we're going to head over to Ben. Ben, you've got some bad news for us today.
I'm always the bringer of bad news. Another artist, Marcus Swayze, died. One of the original Captain Marvel artists. He worked for Wiz Comics back in the day. He was a legend back then, as was anyone who worked back then. It was a tough industry to work in back then. Tough to get your name in anywhere. And, you know, the golden age, it's sad when we lose another golden age artist. You know, we've been losing silver age artists lately too. It's just really sad because these were the guys who built the industry, and now the industry's propped up by a bunch of idiots. And it's sad to see someone who really worked their whole life, you know, just fade away.
But at least he had a good long life. He died at the age of 99, if I remember correctly.
Yes, he did. He did have a full life. He served in the military, as did most artists back then. And he was just, you know, just like Tom said, he had a full life. He did everything that most people nowadays never get to do.
Okay, Ben, let's go ahead and pop on over now. Marie, you've got a buzz story, the top buzz story I definitely want to hear, and I'm sure that everyone of the male genitalia will definitely want to hear this one as well. What have you got?
Well, I got two stories, and the first one is probably the one you're talking about. And yeah, it's coming to us from NBCNews.com. Basically talks about a young woman by the name of Pamela Horton, whom you may have seen in Playboy. Miss Horton, it was Miss October 2012. And she also happens to be a big-time gamer and a webcomic artist. And she's a pretty good one at that. There's some samples of her art in the article, which is linked down in the show notes if you want to see it. The article is really interesting. It talks about her experience of being both a playmate and being an artist trying to break into the gaming industry and doing her own art. It apparently has helped, and there is some speculation probably hindered because of the stereotypes. We all know about some of the sexism in gaming recently, especially of attractive women being essentially ostracized from the gaming community because apparently girls don't belong in games. And she had some of that problem before and probably will still continue to have some of that problems even more so now, just given her association with Playboy. And she's also talks about how the article in Playboy about her did sort of skew some of her interview, as they are wanting to do. Media has that lovely ability to spin things. She tries to clear some of that up, and that she does have a boyfriend, and she enjoys being her gamer guy's dream rather than every gamer guy's dream. But I mean, everyone can dream, right? So she is. It's a pretty long article, and you can check it out. She has some art in there. You can check it out, and she has a webcomic called Kitty Climbing Trees, if you want to check it out. And there's a link to her Facebook page. You can check it out. And other than that, you can also see her. There's one of her, there's her picture. You can see what she looks like in normal clothes in there too, where she was at the League of Legends World Championship. Apparently it does open some doors, to be able to do some really awesome things. Our second story is, actually an interview with, Inman, of the Oatmeal. Talking about his recent successes, about crowdfunding, creativity, and a little bit about himself. I did learn some stuff in this article that came to us from smartplanet.com. Apparently, Inman's Oatmeal wasn't his first website. Apparently, he actually had a dating website before that. A sub-site in his dating website called Zombie Harmony actually was more popular than his dating site. And outranked things like Match.com on Google, which I found highly amusing. He talks about what he did, basically how he's achieved his following on the Oatmeal a little bit, and about his crusade for the Tesla Museum. And there's actually an update on that in the article. You can follow it and see how the funds that he used have been spent on the successful purchase of the Tesla property that they were going after. And there's some advice and some thoughts about the future of the Oatmeal and what he wants to do. So it's a pretty long article as well, and you can check it out, the link in the show notes. And that's all we got for the buzz today.
I'm still hung up over on the maybe we should combine the two stories and have a Playboy zombie dating scene. I know there are... I could finally get that shot at Marilyn Monroe that I always wanted. But changing over to something a little less tacky, let's go ahead and take a look at some of the business news. We've got some good news and some bad news over in business today. The good news is, for those who have ever heard of it, the Humble eBook Bundle. There are a number of Humble book bundles out there, some of them games, some of them eBooks like this one, where you basically pay what you think something is worth, and all the money collected goes to charity. It's a great source. Well, in the latest Humble eBook bundle, Penny Arcade, our friends over at Penny Arcade, Gabe and Tycho, have contributed books 1 and 2 into it. They say that they're overjoyed to have been invited in, but they wanted to remind people that the little arrow by authors can be clicked to reveal a more granular list. So on this list, you can zero out our cut altogether and then scooch the funds over to Child's Play or whatever. So you can work around as to where the money goes. It doesn't have to go to some of these people. Next up, the bad news is that the a California federal judge has ruled that the heirs of Joe Shuster cannot reclaim copyrights to Superman. U.S. District Court Judge Otis D. Wright decided that those rights were surrendered 20 years ago when Shuster's siblings reached an annual payment agreement with DC Comics. So I don't know if the lawyers are going to continue this on anymore, but it's... basically, it looks like that the end of the story for the attempt for the Siegel and Shuster estates to get the rights to Superman back. And in a related story, apparently DC Comics the very next day, Warner Brothers the very next day, announced the Justice League movie now that they don't have to worry about the rights for Superman. We're going to jump right back into our news over with our tech section. Ben, we've got some news over there. What do we have?
Well, first off, we have an article from paincontact.org. about the notorious ad hackers basically usurping ad spots on very popular websites. What this means is if you actually run ads on any websites, these people might be able to usurp your spot, push it down, and put something else up there, and they're getting the paid for the clicks, and you're not. It is a widespread problem, according to this article, and it is affecting, you know, very, you know, top news sites like New York Times and CNN.com, you know, sites I don't go to. So it is a bit of a problem, and they are working to stop it. It's you know, as technology changes and as ad revenue changes, you'll be sure that the big money is going to go there and try to control it as much as possible. And right now it's a little bit more of a shootout because the hackers seem to have a bit of an edge right now. And also we have an article from GigaOhm.com about the social media free speech quandary. From this article, it looks like Reddit is doing some things now. It's let's see here. It's, Tom, can you help me out with this one?
Absolutely. Last week we had a story about some of the problems over in Reddit, where they have some of their subreddit, basically subforums, which are segmented into individual categories. And one of them was one called Creepy Shots, where it was surreptitious pictures taken of women. Some of them were tame pictures, you know, just random snapshots, and some of them were not, you know, under the skirt camera phone type pictures and things like this. There's a bit of a legal battle, and some of the other sites had gone through and had started announcing what was going on, what was happening with it, and Reddit had started blocking those sites from linking on their site. This story, Ben, why don't you go ahead and pick it up from here, because this story primarily talks about what Reddit is doing.
Okay, well, right now Reddit appears to be doing what we're calling self-regulation. They are banning links basically as a way to not host it and to just not, you know, not be responsible for this content because this is very shaky ground right now, and people are saying that, you know, banning links, it goes against the spirit of free speech. And you know, this is the same argument everybody makes. You know, it's a democracy. The internet's a democracy. It's free speech. Well, the thing is, you have to look at the internet like it's property, which is not a very good analogy, but basically web space is property. And, you know, people can put the posters they want on their own property. Agree with it or disagree with it as you want. It's, you can't have someone go onto your lawn and say, well, I want this poster for this politician. And you can't stop me putting it on your property because of free speech. And that's what I'm taking out of it, at least.
Well, thank you, Ben. Now let's go ahead. I seem to see a sense of trend going on, Marie, with some of the stories you've got today. I mean, you start off with a story about a Playboy playmate, a Playboy bunny going through and doing a webcomic. And now you've got something over on our legal section. Why don't you go ahead and tell us what's happening over there?
All right. This is the story coming to us from Robot6 at comicresources.com. And basically the question is, what would you do if your 10-year-old girl came home with a stack of manga, which included an explicit 18-plus only manga, basically yaoi manga, possibly graphic, content, of which is from a suggestion of the article? What would you do? You would probably do what the parent of this 10-year-old girl did, which was write an angry letter to the library basically saying, hey, why didn't you let my kid check out a book that's an adult 18 plus on the cover book? Well, in the article, it actually talks about what the actual story about how the library doesn't control these manga. Apparently, comic books under the Dewey Decimal System are classified differently than irregular books. They're actually classified as art, and specifically, they're classified as nonfiction, which anybody, you know, like if a kid was writing a report or for school or anything, they may have a need for access to nonfiction books. And so these books are available for anybody. Now, apparently this particular book had to actually have been ordered from another libraries, and there was nothing in their system that told them that it was an 18 plus book. So it was just classified as another art book that was nonfiction, according to the Dewey Decimal System. So the library is pretty much saying that there's been a few other challenges over the years, but they don't really ever remove books for this. And it's really up to the parents to be involved with their children and be aware of what they're checking out of the library. And a few people may have said that, you know, like, why is your kid, your 10-year-old kid going by themselves to the library? Apparently, this is a fairly common practice. I mean, I went to the library when I was 10. I spent a lot of time in the library reading when I was 10. It's a pretty safe place normally, but it is important for you to stay involved with what your children are reading and be aware of what your children are interested in and reading and, you know, have that talk with them, parents, and not ignore that they are possibly into hardcore gay manga. So that's our story in Legal today. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you. And it had to be explained to me what yaoi is. Y-A-O-I. Apparently, this is guy-on-guy, male homosexual explicit sex books. Kind of like it's Yuri, Y-U-R-I, which is female-on-female. Oh, boy. They never had stuff like this when I was a kid. And I don't know if I was missing out or not.
Tom, well, Star Trek fanzines?
That's true. That's true. You had to remind me of slash fiction.
You had to take the hit. You had to take the hit, Tom.
Well, it wasn't in the library, though. But let's go ahead. I've got to get ready for this next story in our people section. I've got to get to the right frame of mode for this one. Bring it down. Apparently, horror author Stephen King has launched a webcomic of his own. The series, titled The Little Green God of Agony, went live on October 15th and will update thrice weekly on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays for 8 weeks. Done with veteran comic artist Dennis Calero, the name behind projects like X-Factor and X-Men Noir for Marvel Comics, is doing the artwork for it. You can see this over at Stephen King's own site. Okay, that's done and over with now. So let's go ahead and get back into our regular bits. Maria, I'm going to toss it back over to you now for some of our tidbits. We've got some interesting stuff over there in tidbits talking about launching webcomics.
Indeed. The first story in our tidbit section is coming to us from CNN.com, specifically about Google, actually. There's been Google, a lot of Google in the news, although this one is quite a fun little Google story. And that is that if you were checking it out, you may have actually seen this in the last, I think it was week or so. They you know, the Google Doodles, the ones that they put up whenever there's something going on, an anniversary or something. And they happen to put up one about, if you remember this, you may not, Little Nemo, which was, of course, a series of strips at one time, later called In the Wonderful Land of Dreams, that appeared in American newspapers early 1900s. And it basically was a little story about following a little boy's dreams. And now this is a super, super cute little homage to that that comic strip. And it was animated. If you followed it, it was really cool. If you want to check out the story, check out the link in the show notes, and you can actually see the little doodle there and a little more information about the comic, since probably many of us don't remember it.
Let me interject there for just a moment, Marie, because for those of you who have never heard of Little Nemo in Slumberland, it is one of the classics. Google did this for the 107th anniversary. 107 years ago, this comic came out. So I can understand why a few people haven't heard of it. But it's a fascinating, wonderful story. Wonderful story.
It's very whimsical. It's very colorful. It's really cool. I do vaguely remember, like, a video game or something based on it, but I don't remember the actual comic itself. All right, our second story here is that about Oni Press is launching a webcomic. Oni Press has been a home for a variety of comics, indies, hardcovers, manga, and now it's going to be publishing webcomics. If you would like to read more about what they're going to be publishing, which looks to be a mix of nude material, including a sci-fi romance, a spelling bee comedy, some early issues of Wasteland. You can check out the article, which is quite long, and you can see what Oni Press is up to. And that's what we've got in the tidbits.
Is there any truth to the rumor that one of these comics is going to be My Little Oni?
I don't actually know.
Okay. Well, we'll look more into that as we take our second break, and we'll be back with that information as well as our discussion period right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. It's time for our discussion period.
Hi!
We've got a number of guests today, starting off with our regular from evilspacecat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello.
Our irregular from the Animation Aficionados podcast, Ben Carver.
Howdy.
And the totally warped from Moonbase Press and the Bill Holbrook store, John Lotshaw.
Hi.
We're going to go ahead and start off today talking first about the PayPal story. That's right. PayPal has included in their terms of agreement something that says that you cannot sue them. You cannot join in a class action suit against them. Specifically, Section 14.3 says, an agreement to arbitrate. You and PayPal each agree that any and all disputes or claims that have arisen or may arise between you and PayPal shall be resolved exclusively through final and binding arbitration rather than in court, except that you may assert claims in small claims court if your claims qualify. The Federal Arbitration Act governs the interpretation and enforcement of this agreement to arbitrate. And then it goes into subsection 1, which says, and get ready for this one. This is a long one, folks. Prohibition of class and representative actions and non-individualized relief. You and PayPal agree that each of us may bring claims against the other only on an individual basis and not as a plaintiff or class member in any purported class or representative action or proceeding. Unless both you and PayPal agree otherwise, the arbitrator may not consolidate or join more than one person's or party's claims and may not otherwise preside over any form of a consolidated, representative, or class proceeding. Also, the arbitrator may award relief, including monetary, injunctive, and declaratory relief, only in favor of the individual party seeking relief and only to the extent necessary to provide relief necessitated by that party's individual claim or claims. Any relief awarded cannot affect other PayPal users. Don't you love lawyers?
Yeah, it's this is the same company that told someone to destroy an irreplaceable, priceless violin instead of sending it back. This you know, PayPal prides itself in the fact that we're not a bank, we're not regulated, so we get to make shit up.
Yeah, and that's basically what they're doing here. Is they're basically saying, you can't sue us. You can
no, they're not saying that. They're saying that you can bring claims against them, you can sue them, but only on an individual basis. You forfeit the right to have that joined into or created or turned into a class action suit.
Well, they're also saying, I mean, they have said that it shall be resolved exclusively through arbitration.
Right. Yeah. Yes. But
I mean, unless it's small claims court, in which case it's piddly any shit.
Well, that's right. True. But yeah. this is what got Toyota into trouble because there was an old woman in California that bought a hybrid, and it wasn't getting the mileage that the sticker promised. So she sued them like for the maximum that she could in small claims court. And in that kind of lawsuit, Toyota could only bring one witness. So they just brought this one engineer. He wasn't sympathetic, so they found in favor of this woman, and this woman told all her friends who bought the same hybrid that, and now it's like a death by a million cuts to Toyota.
Now, there is, as we mentioned in the earlier story, there is an opt-out procedure, but they have it so buried that it's extremely difficult to find.
Of course, they always bury it.
It's lawyers. Lawyers being lawyers.
First thing we do.
Bank on you being stupid and impatient and not bother.
I mean, how many times have you gone through, you go to a website or you install software and the first thing comes up is the license and you just click right on through it. Yep. I'm not reading this. Well, it's the same thing as everything else. I'm just going to, I need to get going. I need to get working on this software. I need to want to play this game. I'm just going to click on through it. The next thing you know, they're knocking at the door because you just, agree to give them your firstborn and a pound of flesh.
Apparently, you've been reading your Microsoft terms of agreement again. Now, let me also add, the opt-out agreement, it's normally, you've got this electronic thing that you're going through, and it should be, just put a little check mark in there. No. The opt-out agreement for PayPal, you have to send them an opt-out notice.
Well, of course.
And it must be postmarked no less than 30 days after you accept the user agreement, but it has to be done postmarked before December 1st of 2012. Yeah. I'm surprised that they actually gave him that much time. I was expecting it must be received between November 31st and December 0. It's
well, now, in the instance of a December 0.
Now, the $64 question is, do you think if there will be a challenge to this, and will it survive a challenge in court?
Well, number one, I see the biggest thing that's going to happen is, in a couple of years, someone's going to tell PayPal, look, you got to say you're a bank. And once PayPal becomes a bank, then all of a sudden it's going to have all that regulation slammed down on its head.
PayPal has a bank.
No, but PayPal isn't considered a banking entity.
PayPal has a banking entity. That's how they get around it. We have a banking entity, and it's what issues the debit cards. PayPal is a money transactor. They fall under the same rules as Western Union does. They're just a money. All they're doing is transmitting money back and forth. That's one of the reasons. It used to be they had a money market account that any money that you had in your PayPal account, that balance was invested in a money market account. They had to get rid of that because of the banking rules were saying no, you can't do that if you're a money transactor. So in order to keep from having to get under the banking laws, which are much, much more strict and do not allow shenanigans like this, they dropped that money market account, which, it wasn't a whole lot of interest. But if you kept a balance in your PayPal account, it could be a couple of bucks a month that was coming in.
Hmm.
It was like 1% or something like that. This was before the economy went in the toilet, but it was about 1%, 0.75%, something like that. It wasn't too bad, and so they had to get rid of it because again they didn't they're just kind of skirting that fine line that edge of what qualifies as a bank. And Western Union's the same way. Anybody else that's a money transactor falls under these same rules, and they're able to do these sorts of things. But PayPal gets the scrutiny here because there are so many people online that use PayPal.
Right, PayPal is basically the de facto money transfer system nowadays. I mean, even more than checks or credit cards. People are using PayPal for online transactions. And there are including the PayPal debit card, credit card, and more stores taking PayPal as a method of payment itself.
And PayPal mobile payments, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And PayPal is one of the few mobile payments that's actually going international. It's actually going to be available in other countries that other people are using. So it's actually kind of a catch-22 in some ways for like anybody who is relying on it to get paid. Like I know that there are a lot of webcomic artists and stuff who take payments or donations or whatever through PayPal. And like if if they can't use PayPal anymore. Like, there hasn't been an emerging competitor that is actually competing with PayPal.
Yeah, exactly. even I pay artists through PayPal. It's several artists I've worked in the past. I pay them through PayPal. You
know, I get the money from the books that I sell from Lulu is sent to me through PayPal. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. There are some others like Amazon payments, but who uses those? Nobody. They become so successful because it was very reliable. They it then got the cachet of being owned by eBay. That's where the real growth took off, was because so many people were using it for eBay transactions, and then eBay bought them and integrated it directly into eBay, so that it, basically you only could use PayPal.
Yeah, and the one thing that really took off, everyone got a PayPal account, was on eBay, where you do pay it later, and they gave you like $10.
Yeah. So it's you know, this is what happens when you have something be so dominant in a market segment, is, you know, and this is basically them covering themselves. They don't because they can. They're not limited by the banking laws to prevent these sorts of things. So we're going to go ahead and do it. And I'm surprised that they hadn't done it years before. I'm surprised that it took them this long to get around to doing this. I, you know, the fact that they've done it is not that big of a deal. What's more surprising to me is the fact that it's 2012. PayPal has been around for what, almost 15 years now, and they're just now getting around to doing this?
Yep. Yep.
That doesn't say much for their litigation department for being on the ball.
Well, if you've read a lot of the stuff about PayPal and exactly what's gone on with litigation with them and stuff in the past, is like, you know, and on some of their tomfoolery in that department, it's not really that surprising, because they very clearly haven't been on the ball for a long time in that department.
Exactly. Ain't that the truth? Well, let's go ahead and go on to our next story. This one strikes a little more close to home for me, and that is that the creators of Superman, the heirs of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, have lost the most recent battle for regaining the rights to the Man of Steel. A federal judge in California has reported, by the name of Otis D. Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, decided that the rights to Superman were surrendered 20 years ago when Joe Shuster's siblings reached an annual payment agreement with DC Comics and gave up interest in the Son of Krypton.
Wait a minute. The judge's name was Otis?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to call that there was some prejudice there.
Mr. Luthor.
Exactly.
The 1992 agreement, and I quote here, which represented the Schuster's heirs' opportunity to renegotiate the prior grants of Joe Shuster's copyrights, superseded and replaced all prior grants of the Superman copyrights, the judge ruled, according to the Hollywood Reporter. According to the Associated Press, this ruling means that DC Comics and its owner, Warner Brothers, will retain all rights to continue using the character in books, films, television, mediums. Now, there is one thing which kind of got glossed over in this, and that is, okay, this, without knowing the exact agreement that took place, it does sound like Joe Shuster's heirs and family did give up the rights to Superman for that annual payment. But what about Jerry Siegel?
Well, that's a completely separate matter.
Actually, there have been articles that have stated that Warner Brothers is using this to shoehorn in his family's rights to Superman, and that they have lost it as well because of this ruling.
Well, if a precedent has been established, a legal precedent here, I'm sure this is going to be appealed. This will go up to a higher court or try to go to a higher court. This is only in a district court. So there's the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court after that. So this is very early on in the whole process.
Well, you can't really say it's early on this, because this has been going on.
No. What I'm saying is early on is this is the lowest court decision for this. Right, it's the district court. Then it'll be appealed. Because these things almost always are automatically appealed. It will be appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals, who will then rule on it. They'll rule one way or the other, and then the other side, whichever the losing side, will then appeal it and are trying to get it certified by the Supreme Court. And so this isn't over yet.
No, but it is a major.
It is a blow. It is a blow.
It's a blow. But these things go back and forth. The appeals court could strike this ruling down for any number of reasons. One of them that, you know, that they didn't like the tie that the prosecuting attorney wore that day. There's so many reasons that this could be set aside, and either set aside or vacated or force a new trial or what have you. There's so many things that this is very early on. Yes, it's been going on for many, many years, but in terms of getting a decision, this is very early on in the process.
Exactly. It's just like the Samsung Apple verdict where, you know, as soon as Hogan opened his mouth, appeals became so much easier because Hogan's an idiot.
Well, and there, I'm glad I specified that this was a federal judge in California, where it will eventually work its way up to the Ninth Circus. I find it funny that it's not going through, you know, neither New York, where DC Comics had been based for all those years, or in Ohio, where the Schuster family is from.
I'm surprised that they didn't try to get it in Texas. Was it East Texas? That's the one that intellectual property loves to go through because they're so. Warner would have loved to have had it in this one because it's so. The court tends to rule more for the rights holders rather than anybody, you know, trying to go against that.
Exactly.
I think it's East Texas.
It is, and actually, this reminds me of another court case about intellectual property rights and stuff. Anyone here know Chuck Wepner?
No, can't see.
Okay, Chuck Wepner was a boxer. He had very low standing. He was known as the bayonet bleeder because he always gets cut up in his fights, and he got a 1 in a million chance to fight Muhammad Ali.
Oh, I saw this movie.
And he lasted 15 rounds before he was knocked out.
Adrian!
And, yeah, exactly. Sylvester Stallone for years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Kept on saying about how Chuck Wepner was the inspiration for Rocky, and Chuck Wepner didn't get any money. So what Chuck Wepner did was he sued in a local court. You know, he lived in New Jersey, so he sued in the New Jersey court, Sylvester Stallone, and because it was a New Jersey court, his hometown, his home turf, Stallone had to settle.
Yeah, and it's California is known to be very pro-entertainment industry. So, I mean, you've got the little guy against Warner Brothers, and there's no doubt as which side the California courts are going to go through. I mean, these are California courts are the same ones that let murderers go free and drug users walk the streets. But that's another story altogether.
Right.
Let's go ahead and head on over to our third story. And that is, we had a lot of fun with this one, and that is about the library director over in Seattle. Well, actually, the White Center Library, just south of Seattle, Washington, who refused to restrict access to basically Japanese porn. Yaoi manga, specifically, a 10-year-old girl had checked out a stack of manga that included the second volume of Makoto Tatino's, sounds like a pizza roll,
Hero I was about to make that Heel. Joke.
It did have a parental advisory mark on the front cover applied by the publisher, not the library. It is rated 18+, again, by the publisher on the back cover, but, they just let her check it out.
Well, it's the way I see it is this, is a parent should really know what their kids are doing. And honestly, a yaoi would raise more questions for the parents than parents are comfortable with at that age. And that's what I see is the big problem here. We don't want libraries restricting anything, honestly, because then you would have some crazy guy shoot John Lennon, and all of a sudden you can't read Catcher in the Rye anymore.
But as Murray had reported in this story. It wasn't, I mean, it wasn't, she didn't just go over to this, pull out the book off the shelf, go check it off. I mean, this was.
No, she had to hunt this down.
Yes.
This had to be hunted down, requested from another library. And so she knew exactly what she was looking for.
Hey, girls know what they want.
Oh, yeah.
And oh, yeah. I mean, it was the situation to where it was her, she was with her grandmother. Her grandmother dropped her off at the library and waited in the car until she came out with the book. So, I mean, she had this amongst a bunch of other books.
So this was premeditated.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and this
there
is
was no one. I mean, my big questions, the questions that I have here on this is, one, why are the libraries carrying this anyway? I mean, this, I'm sorry, this is not an art book. You know, it's not a how to draw. It's not an anatomy book. It's not anything like this. This is for one thing and one thing only.
Well, the interesting thing is all graphic novels, all comic books are classified as art books. All of them. So all comics in a library under the Dewey Decimal System, according to this article, are classified as art books, nonfiction.
Well,
so they're not actually classified. Here's the crazy thing. They separate out the teen books, but they don't separate out the adult books. What?
Yeah.
Well, it's a government entity. What do you expect?
Yeah, that basically boils it down. But I mean, it also shows a complete failure in the library. I mean, somebody had to take this order, and the people who, I don't know if they do it through computers or if they use telephones or whatnot, they, you know, over in this library, but they had to contact another library. So they couldn't see that it was a 10-year-old girl acting for this, flagged on the cover.
Yeah, well, here's,
the thing is, they also said that it, in the computer where they actually ordered it, it was not flagged as adult.
Well, yeah.
According to the way I read this, it said that there was no way to flag it as adult. There was the computer system does, or did the computer system have a way of flagging books at all?
It didn't say that they did, but it doesn't say that that was an option. I guess it doesn't.
We don't know if 50 Shades of Grey was going to be flagged. So she could have gone in there and ordered 50 Shades of Grey and gotten that as well, for all we know.
Well, let me give you an example, because I actually have a cousin who is a librarian, and I also know other librarians. And one librarian I knew actually told me once, Ben, if a 15-year-old boy came to me and wanted to check out a Playboy, and I knew he would actually read it, I would check it out to him. Because
reading it for the articles.
Well, the point is... Well, the point is not enough kids read anymore anyway, so anything that gets them reading is not a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, I know that with people mine and John's age, I mean, it used to be that they would go over, the young boys would go over and hide in the nonfiction section, sneaking peeks at the National Geographics. But there's a big difference between photos of the subcontinent and the natives trouncing around versus what is a very, like I said, there's no other way to put it than male gay porn. Granted, drawn from Japan, but it's still this. And the fact that it's a failure in the library system that they don't have any way of breaking this down, which I find extremely strange. They don't have any way of flagging it something as inappropriate for children. I mean, it's not even a situation of a teenager doing this. This is a 10-year-old, a preteen. And then going through and all the people, I mean, even the librarian who handed the books. I mean, when she goes and gets those books, you're saying, okay, I've got to go through, and at least it used to be library cards, and you put a little stamp in the back of the book. Go through and look at each of these books and say, oh, you're 10 years old. This is 18 plus. So why was there this breakdown? I completely agree with the uncle who sent the angry letter, because this was a complete failure on the library's part. And the fact that the library really, they're just saying, oh, well, yeah, this stuff happens.
Well, I also wonder, is like, if she's getting the second volume, she obviously had the first one.
Maybe she got a scanlation.
She may have had a scanlation, but she may, like, if she'd gotten this from the library, the chances are that she knew that library carried this and that she went and got the second volume. So she probably has been reading this for a little while, either online or whatever. And that's, I mean, I kind of think that parents do need to pay attention to what their kids are looking at.
Okay. And I think that any kid who really wants to find porn, even back in Tom's day, will find porn.
It's a lot easier than going down to the library, too.
Exactly. And this is the modern age. I mean, get on the internet.
Oh, there's porn on the internet, Tom?
Apparently you've never heard this podcast before then, Bill.
Or the song The Internet is for Porn.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead. We're running out of time, so I want to bring up the last story. We talked last week about Reddit and some of the stuff that they've had in there. And we talked about the subreddit, creepy shots, and some of the foo-rah around that. Well, the story that we had this time was more about the usual freedom of speech. I mean, you can't do this to us type of stuff. And banning the links to other from other places to protect freedom of speech. Now, the moderator of Reddit's subreddit, rpolitics, posted a statement saying, quote, "We feel this type of behavior is completely intolerable. We volunteer our time on Reddit to make it a better place for the users and should not be harassed and threatened for that. We should all be afraid of the threat of having our personal information investigated and spread around the internet." She makes a very good point.
Well, like I always said, the people who complain about free speech on websites that they don't own are the people that go onto a forum, cause trouble, and as soon as they violate the forum rules, oh, that's not America's rules. America, freedom of speech. Yeah, Tom knows what I'm talking about.
Well, I mean, go ahead, Marie.
I was going to say, I used to moderate forums, and I was part of a community that, you know, was kind of notorious for having troublemakers that would show up and do exactly this. And they would do the same thing. They would pitch a fit, and they would scream and yell when the rules of a community were applied to them, because for some reason they thought that the rules of the community did not apply to them. And, you know, a lot of them were common sense. You know, don't harass people, don't be a public douchebag, you know, don't start shit, don't do this, don't do that, don't, and when other people, you know, like if they were, don't harass other users, things like that, and, you know, when they're essentially disciplined for breaking the rules, they pitch a fit about free speech and I can do what I want. It's like, yeah, no, you're on our website, we're kind of dictating the rules.
Yeah, people really don't understand what free speech, what the First Amendment means. The First Amendment applies only to the federal government.
Yep. Well, and people also forget that, I mean, they're forgetting the other half of the equation. Yes, you have rights, but there are also responsibilities that go with these rights.
Yes.
And going through and posting pictures that are degrading, I mean, not just degrading, but taking advantage of other people, like some of these creep shots things do, or going through and... I mean, we can even go down over on the 910 forums, 910 community. We have people who pitch a fit every once in a while because we have a porn filter.
Swear filter?
Swear filter. Thank you.
Yes.
And they don't like it because they go through this. I'm sorry, folks. It's like I've told them. It's private property. You are guests in our house, you know, and you do need to self-regulate. But if you don't, and it's been shown, and God knows we've had enough people do this over on the 910 community, if you can't self-regulate, then we get to.
Well, that's the point of having a moderator, is they are a person who enforces rules of a particular, you know, forum or whatever. If they're, you know, that's a good moderator will do that. And I mean, like, these moderators are complaining and about basically having to do their job to some degree. In the sense of like, okay, we have these rules now that we must enforce. This is what you must do. It's like, yeah, you volunteered. If you don't like it anymore, we'll get a new one.
Yeah.
That's how moderators come and go all the time. It's happened for years on forums. This is just another forum.
Yeah, exactly. And it is one thing I've noticed all the time is it's always the troublemakers complaining about, well, you know, rules this and, you know, the First Amendment allows me to do this. It is what they call the greater internet douchebag theory.
Well, and let's go ahead and put it this way, too. I mean, when it comes right down to it, free speech is not being infringed. If I do not allow you to say something in my community, that does not stop you from going elsewhere and saying something.
Exactly.
Except the people who run those areas. It's not like I'm going to go to your house, staple your mouth shut, break your fingers, and tie you to a chair, throw you in the river. Although, for some of the people that we've had to deal with, that doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Okay, Jack Bauer.
Jack Bauer was a wimp.
Yeah, but this is just basically it. It's like, we're not actually stopping you from venting yourself elsewhere to your friends or anything else. We're just saying that you can't, this is an inappropriate forum for this particular behavior.
Yeah,
so you're not allowed to do that here.
Even something
off. It's like walking in, if you go up into a coffee shop and flash them, you know, you're going to get arrested for indecent exposure. Hello?
Even something awful has filters and moderators. I mean, something awful has what they call the swear filter, where every time the F word's used, they automatically change it to gently caress.
Oy.
I bet that makes them for some amusing posts.
You try reading a something awful thread, and there's lots of gentle caresses.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite lines has been that it is said that violence is the first refuge of the incompetent. And I've always said, what is profanity other than a verbal violence? So, I mean, if you don't like the way that some communities are run, if you don't like the way that some forums are run, you're completely welcome to go elsewhere, folks. I agree with the moderators over at Reddit that are finally starting to take some authority and do what they're supposed to do. And for some of those who don't like some of the rules are being set up, tough. Start your own.
It's tethered swimming for them.
Exactly.
But I think, John, do you have anything else to add to this?
No, not really.
I mean, I bring that up because, I mean, when I always like to talk about, when we talk about stuff like this, you work with what happens to be, at least in my opinion, one of the nicest people in the webcomic industry.
Yes.
Yeah.
And absolutely.
I don't mean your dog.
No arguments there.
Yeah. And I wish there were more people like Bill Holbrook around. Unfortunately, we seem to have more trolls than we do good people around.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that unfortunately. But you know, the anonymity of the internet just kind of brings that out in some people, because they can get away with it, and unfortunately, we have to slog through that.
Exactly. I mean, if some of these people who take some of these things they say were to say it to you in person, there would be repercussions.
They wouldn't have the balls to say it in person, let's be honest.
Well, that's why they're all pitching a fit about being outed and about being publicly known. I mean, if you can take personal responsibility for what you say, I mean, everybody who, I moderated the forums, people knew who I was. They knew my name. They knew that when I said stuff, I meant it, and that, you know, I would come to their house and represent if need be. So, you know, it wasn't like, you know, if somebody was, outing me, it'd be like, old news, folks. They all know who I am.
Yeah. So, all these cowards and perverts that are taking pictures under women's skirts and putting them online, they're doing it under anonymity. If people knew who they were, there would be lawsuits on their laps right now.
Lawsuits, nothing. I could imagine a number of angry boyfriends or husbands that would be looking these people up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
well, yes, there will be blood.
Okay,
and they're angry. Well, the fact that they're petrified and angry about being outed implies that they understand and they know that what they're doing is wrong. And if their anonymity is compromised, they're going to be punished for their misdeeds.
Exactly. In a legal court, it would show that they know the difference between right and wrong, and therefore they would be liable and, you know.
Absolutely. And that's why they're freaking out. And that just says to me, it's like they understand that what they're doing is wrong and that they, you know, it deserves to be dealt with.
Absolutely, absolutely. But for people who never do wrong, I want to thank everybody who's joined us today. Starting off with from the Bill Holbrook store, from Moonbase Press, and that other thing that you do. What was that, John?
Oh, Accidental Centaurs at www.accidentalcentaurs.com.
John Latshaw.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Our own cartoon character from the Animation Aficionados, Ben Carver. And Ben, where can we find your stuff?
At animationaficionados.com. Check it out. We just put our 100th episode.
And, of course, Marie Terry, the lone female voice in this wilderness.
Yes, the evil space cat from evilspacecat.com, where you can find links to my webcomics.
And that leaves me, the host and the guy who always puts his name on stuff. I'm Jack Smith. Otherwise known as Thomas Revoir from 910 Comics, that's 910cmx.com. Glad y'all joined us. We'll see you next week, and we'll see you in the funny papers.